up in the sky. It's a bird. It's a plane. No, it's Superman in the Silver Age. Your geek history lesson on Superman in the Silver Age is now in session. Hello and welcome to Geek History Lesson. I am Jason Kent Inman.
I'm Ashley Victoria Robinson. Welcome to your Mind University, because you have stumbled onto the podcast where we take one character, construct, or superhuman from popular culture and teach you everything you need to know about them in about an hour. But this month, Jason, there's a pretty...
In this episode,
there's a pretty special thing going on, isn't
dun,
there?
That's the Max Fleischer Superman theme song, if you don't know. Superman is leading Action Comics, as we've all known. He's done it for 80 years. And Action Comics is going to cross a threshold that no other comic book in history has ever done, 1,000 issues.
Action Comics are so old, guys.
Yep. So in honor of that, we did an episode a long time ago called Superman in the Golden Age.
Mm-hmm.
And we did that because Superman's history is so wide, it's so varied, that it seemed a shame to put Superman into only one episode. So the bigger characters, mainly the Trinity, we have broken up into the Golden Age, the Silver Age. We don't have a Silver Age Batman. We don't have a Silver Age Wonder Woman. You can request those at geekhistorylesson.com or facebook.com/geekhistorylesson.
Or on Twitter at GHL Podcast.
Yep. But this is the second installment in the giant history
that is
of Superman. And I thought, you know, in honor of Superman's 80th anniversary, there was no better time to do this episode.
About time we circled back to it.
Yes, and a lot of people have requested or asked for it. Nobody requested it, actually. I looked. But, you know, a lot of people were like, oh, man, we want this one.
Mm-hmm,
so that's the reason why we decided to do it. This is going to be the Silver Age. It's going to be a little bit different than a normal episode.
What?
There will be no 10-cent origin.
Go back and listen to the Golden Age
one. Yep, go back to the Golden Age one. There will be no Meet Cute.
Go back and listen to the Golden Age one.
Yep, the Golden Age one. You can find that on iTunes or wherever you want to listen to. But buckle up. This is going to be a longer than normal episode.
More bang for your buck.
Yeah, that's right. Now, first off, before we get into this, I want to remind you of the comic book ages.
Ooh, okay.
Okay, so the Golden Age, which we've already covered for Superman, was from 1938 to 1956. Ashley, I want to ask you, do you remember what is the event that ends the Golden Age and begins the Silver Age?
Barry Allen?
You are correct. It is the first appearance of Flash Barry Allen in Showcase number 4 of October of 1956.
See, sometimes I can remember stuff.
Yes. Now, the Silver Age goes from 1956 to, Ashley, do you have a guess? Now, your answer might be different on this, because we are going to get into some uncharted Geek History Lesson territory here.
Whoa, what?
Because there is a little bit of an argument about how many ages there are of comic books.
Oh, I have feelings about this.
And where they start and stop. Now, I have made a determination.
Great.
This is the Geek History Lesson determination. Whether you agree with me or not disagree with me, I don't care. This is where my scholarly pursuits have led me for Superman. Ashley, where do you think the Silver Age is?
Right, and I'm going to also say, if you listen to our other Golden Age episodes, we do a little bit of arbitrary timelines based on those specific characters as well. I'm going to say that I think the Silver Age ends in 1978.
Now, some people will agree with you. Some people won't agree with you. I don't agree with you.
Why?
So, according to why 78?
Because
of Superman the movie?
I think it has something to do with the Justice Society.
Or the DC implosion, which was around that
I know it has to do with Earth 2, but I can't remember the specific event.
Now, in my research, neither one of those came up.
Okay.
I have determined by my research that the Silver Age ends, in my view, in 1970.
Really?
Yes. Now, the reason, because that is when the Bronze Age starts of comic books. The Bronze Age of comic books. Now, the Bronze Age of comic books.
You think the Bronze Age starts that early?
Yes, and let me explain why. I'm trying to teach you. This is what this podcast is about.
Why?
So the Bronze Age is the thing that I was talking about. Mm-hmm. The Bronze Age is the part of comic book age histories that some people are like, that doesn't exist.
Yeah.
There is one definite date that everybody does agree. 1985, Crisis on Infinite Earths is the beginning of the modern age
of comics. Yeah.
Yes. The Bronze Age is where people disagree. And my research, there is no single event or comic book that really kicks off the Bronze Age and ends the Silver Age.
Not in the same accepted way as Barry Allen.
Yes. However, I picked a comic book because I think this is the beginning of it.
I have a guess.
The reason for the Bronze Age is because the tone of comics in the 70s shifted to being more socially aware, to being more political, to not just being hokey. Hey, there's an alien. Let's punch him.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm calling the beginning of Bronze Age for this issue as April 1970 with the issue of Green Lantern, where Green Arrow was added as the title character.
So you start with Hard Traveling Heroes.
A little bit before Hard Traveling Heroes, but where the series by Denny O'Neill and Neil Adams focused on poverty, and Speedy became a drug addict.
I just meant more of that era.
Sure, yeah. So like that, to me, is the start of the Bronze Age.
It's interesting. I've heard that argument before. I don't necessarily disagree with it. I find that the argument for when the Bronze Age begins is either Green Lantern, Green Arrow, or it's New Teen Titans is often a big demarcation as well. So, like,
didn't New Teen Titans not start till 1980 though?
It doesn't start until 1980, okay. But for a lot of people, the Bronze Age is only 80 to 85.
Yeah, I can see that. I don't know. Once I read the argument about the Green Lantern, Green Arrow series, I kind of had to agree because it does not have a Silver Age-y tone.
That's fair. That's fair.
All right. So there you go. Let's go back into Superman and the Silver Age. Now, this lesson, as I said, is going to be a little bit different. We're going to go into fictional character history. Mm-hmm. We're going to go out to publication history and a bunch of stuff like that. Okay. So back to Superman. Okay. Before we can go any further in talking about the comic book Superman, we have to talk about a real world event that rocked Superman to his core.
Holy smokes.
On June 16th of 1958... George Reeves, Superman, the star of The Adventures of Superman, was found dead from a gunshot wound. Now, this is not a comic book event, but there is no way you could talk about Superman in the Silver Age, especially the Silver Age starting in 58, without talking, or 54, excuse me, 56, excuse me, sorry. We had to talk about George Reeves.
Okay.
So there was an open shut case of suicide, said the LA police, but many friends of George Reeves' friends called it a murder, and there was no shortage of suspects or motives. And this event not only rocked Superman fans to his core, because I don't know if you know, George Reeves had Beatlemania levels of fans when he went out in public.
Did he really?
He did. He got hounded and he got harassed because everybody saw him as Superman. The Adventures of Superman was an insanely popular show.
Mm.
It was so popular. It was so popular that George Reeves could get hired for no other gigs because everybody saw him as Superman.
Mm.
And he actually died in poverty.
I knew that.
So George Reeves' death leads to something called the Superman curse.
Okay.
Ashley, do you know what this is?
No. To be fair, everything I know about George Reeves could fit in a thimble.
Well, this has more to do than not George Reeves. So.
Well, I don't know. No, I don't know anything about this.
I don't really believe in this curse.
Okay.
But I thought it was interesting to mention.
Sure.
The Superman curse refers to a series of supposedly related misfortunes that have plagued creative people involved in many adaptations of Superman.
Mm.
Another reasoning of the Superman curse is, of course, Christopher Reeve, who played Superman in 4 theatrical films, who was paralyzed in a 1995 horseback riding accident and then died 9 years later. Another person that has supposedly connected these series of misfortunes of Superman is Bud Collier. He voiced the first Superman cartoon from 1941 to 1943. He later voiced Superman again in 1966. 3 years after that 1966 voicing, he was found dead of a heart ailment in the age of 61.
Wow.
Now, there is a full listing of how they blame Margot Kidder going crazy on this.
Jesus.
Basically, if you're tied to a Superman thing and anything bad went wrong in your life, they say it's the Superman curse.
So, like some poltergeist level nonsense.
Well, there's a full list of them online, and just because, and I'm not going to mention all of them, but I thought because there were so many.
Does Richard Pryor fall into that?
I don't know. I feel we had to talk about it.
Yeah, so, totally.
All right, let's get back to the, let's get to the topic, the
okay,
comics.
Yeah, let's.
Let's go to the comics.
Comics.
The topics.
Comic books.
The comics.
Comics.
Yes, I'm gonna call them comics.
Silly books, funny books.
So the one thing about the Silver Age and the comics of Superman and the Silver Age is in the late 1950s, this is where the version of Superman that we know of as Superman takes shape finally. Because Ashley, how would you describe Golden Age Superman?
I think the Big Blue Boy Scout is a pretty apt description of Silver Age Superman.
Well, yeah, yes, that's where we'll get to that. How do you feel? Let's talk about the differences. How do you feel Golden Age Superman is?
Oh, Golden Age Superman is rougher around the edges.
Yep.
He's a lot angrier, and more powerful.
He's very direct.
Yeah. Which I think is a reflection of the time.
Would you call him a Boy Scout?
No.
Yeah,
because
exactly.
Boy Scout has this sort of like twee connotation to it, and a softer side that I don't think we get to the Silver Age. Now, the Silver Age also has a softening of a lot of characters around this time. Batman and Robin have like a very emotional relationship throughout the Silver Age. Like, Dick is constantly crying throughout the Silver Age. And maybe that's hippies. I don't know. But yeah, I also think a reason why the Silver Age Superman, or a lot of what we love, is defined by that is because that's what so strongly inspired the 78 movie, which for many people remains the defining Superman.
The definite Superman, yeah. Yes. So when editorial duties at DC Comics were redistributed, Mort Weisinger got sole control over Superman.
Okay.
This resulted in him developing the Superman legend, basically everything we know about Superman, because he was so set on developing continuity in Superman. And this is actually...
Mort, that's his name?
Mort Weisinger.
Mort, yep. You are ahead of your time, baby.
He is actually credited with the first serious attempt at developing continuity in comics history.
Wow.
Now, even though a lot of the issues have, you know, one-off adventures and
stuff like that.
They always refer to past adventures now.
Oh, that's cool.
So, an instrumental force also behind the Superman being developed in the Silver Age was Jerry Siegel.
Hey,
who's that guy?
Hey, one of the creators of Superman.
Yep. He actually returned to DC in 1959 to write the adventures of Superman once again.
I didn't know that. Yep. That's awesome.
And Weisinger and Siegel, together with science fiction greats like Edmund Hamilton, who wrote the great Action Comics 300, I believe, and Otto Binder, who is responsible for a lot of Legion of Superhero stuff.
We've mentioned him in a number of Geek History lessons.
They all set out to, their goal was to define the personalities of the characters in Superman and all the Superman mythos. So they wanted each character to be distinct and to have an understandable personality.
Interesting.
So because of this, this is the reason why at this time in Superman's history, we start seeing more of his childhood adventures.
Superboy.
Yep, and more rewritings of his origin, including the addition of Lex Luthor to his origin.
Mm-hmm.
So in the comic books, the public notification of Smallville being Superboy's home brings the young Lex Luthor into Superboy's life. And this actually results in their lifelong hatred of each other.
Mm-hmm.
This is also the story where Luthor receives his first name.
Mm.
Before this, he was only known as Luthor. Now, Lex Luthor had a massive talent for scientific inventiveness, which asserted itself, of course, in Lex's earliest days. He became highly interested in the public exploits of Superboy because he became obsessed with him, and he forced his parents to move to Smallville so that he could be closer to Superboy.
That's so funny.
Because Lex was like, I'm going to be his sidekick. Lex,
foolish.
Yep. Lex focused all of his scientific skills on finding some way to help out Superboy. And he eventually discovered Superboy's weakness to kryptonite.
Mm.
And he decided to make a cure to the meteorite's effects on Superboy.
Aww.
So Lex began to experiment with various exotic materials, which were dangerous and explosive.
How do you get those in the Silver Age? There ain't no eBay.
Look, this is back in the 1950s. There's no safety regulations anywhere.
I guess you start working when you're like 12.
A kid could have walked into a nuclear missile silo and everybody would have been like, look at that boy. Ah, good lad. So everywhere.
Sure.
So The chemicals, of course, reacted badly and exploded in Lex's lab, filling the room with various poisonous gases. Superboy reacted to the explosion. He arrived to find Lex, you know, close to death, but was unable to enter the room because of the kryptonite.
Whoa.
So Superboy stood outside of the room and blew the kryptonite and gases out of the room, saving Lex's life. But the exhaust from when Superboy blew the chemicals over Lex resulted in permanently removing all of the hair from Lex's uncovered head.
Oh no, there's a very funny cover of this.
Lex was shocked to find his perfect idol do such a blunderous save. He was mad, and Lex was inconsolable upon his disfigurement. That's what he called his hair, losing his hair, which he thought
it's a little melodramatic.
Yeah, he thought it was deliberate. He's a teenager.
Of course he thought it was deliberate.
So he took the partially completed kryptonite cure and destroyed it in front of Superboy, pledging there and then that he would dedicate his life to proving that he was superior to Superboy.
What a dick.
Yep. Now, Ashley, I want to ask you a question.
Mm-hmm.
Do you like or dislike Lex Luthor being a part of Superboy's origins?
I don't need Lex and Superboy to have existed in the same time. I think it's dramatically more interesting if this adult man becomes fixated on Superman.
So wait on Lex until Superman comes to Metropolis.
I agree. Yeah, that's my preference. I know you like their early relationship a version of it.
I was against it until the TV series Smallville.
Yes.
And then Smallville, I thought, did it so well that I was like, you know what? I'm fine with this.
Okay.
I'm fine with it now.
Look at you admitting that you can change your mind.
I know, right?
Yeah,
oh my God. Comic book fans can change their opinion? My God. So on a more positive and non-Luther note, Superboy in the comic book soon became a member of the Legion of Superheroes.
Hey, those guys.
Existing in the far future of the 30th century, the Legion of Superheroes was a teenage troop of superheroes, and they came from different planets and inherited superpowers. The organization easily inducted Superboy as a member, and he would go on to become one of their most distinguished numbers and members.
Nice.
During Clark's teenage years on Earth, the Kents also sold their farm and became shopkeepers in Smallville for a time.
Really?
Yeah, this actually happened. And they settled into a more modern lifestyle, supporting Clark's day-to-day life as well as his superhero activities, because he's Superboy. But they grew elderly and eventually died of tropical fever when they were on a cruise. I am not joking.
Jesus.
That is the Silver Age death of the Kents. They go on a cruise and they die.
Well, Tim Drake's mom goes on a cruise and gets kidnapped and murdered, so I guess it's viable.
Now, before dying, Jonathan Kent reminded Clark to continue doing good deeds and to not lose sight of who he was.
Aww.
For the first time in Action Comics 262, because we're going to continue this trend of in new concepts that we know about being introduced in the Silver Age.
Cool.
In March of 1960, the notion that Superman's powers derive from the yellow sun radiation appears for the very first time.
Whoa.
20 years after his, over 20 years after his first appearance.
That's wild.
In Superman 146 in July of 1961, the explanation is amplified. It says that Superman's muscular powers, his super strength, his speed, and his flight are attributed to gravity, and the powers of his super senses, X-ray vision, telescopic vision, are attributed to the yellow sun. And vulnerability is sort of compared to a super suntan. Later, later this was all altered to make a portion of his flying ability also from the yellow sun.
That's so 1960s.
Now, the new explanation also provided an unexpected bonus of a new weakness for Superman by making stories where he no longer had superpowers on a world without a yellow sun.
Cool.
Around this time, a continuing series of adventures concerning Kal-El's life on Krypton established for the first time that Clark was at least 3 years old and fluent in Kryptonese.
Mm.
What's Kryptonese, Ashley?
The language of Krypton.
Yep. Before the explosion of his planet. No more would he spend the first decades of his life wondering what he was and why he was so different. He would always remember Krypton from this point forward. I don't like that.
I was going to ask you about that. I also know that a very early version of Krypto followed Cal to Earth because he was his childhood pet, and like they had a bond.
We'll get to Krypto. You just leave. You leave him be. You leave Krypto be.
Okay.
Stay, boy.
Okay.
Stay. So yeah, I like Clark leaving Krypton without a memory of Krypton, because I like...
I honestly think that's more tragic.
I like Supergirl remembering Krypton and not Clark. But again, this is the Silver Age, and the Silver Age really expands Krypton a lot.
Yeah.
This is the most we're going to talk about it, really, because I think other stuff's more important.
Cool.
All right, now back to the publishing history.
Okay.
Moit Weisinger's next move was to introduce a title for our favorite Superman supporting character, Lois Lane.
Woo!
And we talked a little bit about this in the Golden Age, but I want to talk a little bit more about this. Superman's girlfriend Lois Lane, debuted its first issue in March of 1958. In the first story, I'm going to tell you about this.
Okay.
Lois becomes the Witch of Metropolis.
Love it.
So she goes to a museum opening.
Hey, she's a witch. And yep. Lana was also a witch.
Yep. And there she accidentally breaks a mirror at this exhibit about this crazy lady that people thought could be a witch.
Mm.
She returns home to type up her story and finds herself transformed into a green and grotesque witch.
Great.
She runs out onto the street thinking about going back to the museum to cure her form, but she sees Superman in this ugly form and pretends to not know who he is. As she wanders back to the museum, she sees a robbery, and as they begin to shoot her, she assumes that if she is now a witch, then surely she can cast a spell, and she says,
"Yes, Lois, live your best life."
And she says, "Hicks, hawks, hex, bullets aside." And the bullets don't hit her.
Yes, Lois.
Yep. She returns home.
I want that on a t-shirt. Yep.
She returns home. And the sun rises, and her face returns to normal.
Mm-hmm.
But the next night, she turns into a witch again, and she decides to do what any human being would do when they turn into a witch. Hex a broomstick and ride it.
Exactly. She has great days.
Yep. Eventually, Lois, though, in her evil witchy mind, decides to betray Superman.
No.
And reveal his secret identity.
Lois.
But at the last second, her conscience takes over. And Superman comes to her later. She's crying her eyes out and actually reveals that she wasn't cursed ever. She'd actually been doused with an old age gas.
What?
Yep. From a science visit that she had after the museum. And she had to believe that she was a witch or else she would have gone crazy. So Superman faked all her powers over the last couple of days to make sure that she wouldn't go crazy until the old age serum wore off.
I mean, that's basically it was all a dream.
Yep. Get ready, because this is starting to lead off into what most people define the Silver Age as. Now, real quickly, before we move on from Lois Lane, at the peak of its popularity in 1962, Superman's girlfriend Lois Lane was the third best-selling comic book in the United States.
Holy smokes.
This book lasted for 16 years.
It has some of my all-time favorite comic book covers.
Yep. And to me as well leads to that it is insane that Lois Lane doesn't have a book in current DC Universe continuity at the time of this recording.
Correct.
So, now, as I said, this period of Superman can also be known as quite silly because of the Silver Age, and this is where we're going to get into it. Stories were mostly dreams, weirdo stuff, and one of DC's crazier policies for comic books at this time was to hire artists to draw crazy covers.
I was hoping you were going to bring that up.
And then force the writers to write a plot to match that cover.
Yeah. So you'd be like, why are they on an elephant? Mm-hmm. Who knows?
Yep. So this led to some of the sillier and crazier Superman adventures that you will ever hear about. And I have a small sampling.
Oh, my body is so ready.
Okay, here we go.
Yeah.
Let's start off with Action Comics number 243. This cover, it has Superman with a lion head.
Great.
It's probably the defining image of the Silver Age.
Mm-hmm.
It is a story in which a descendant of the mythological being called Circe gives Superman mineral water that turns him into a lion man because he won't marry her.
Mineral water.
Yep. He flies around helping people while hiding his lion face, even though, you know, this is the DC Universe and weird stuff happens every day. People couldn't handle Superman as a lion.
Yeah.
Superman eventually heads back to the Fortress of Solitude, checks the library, finds a book that explains to him how to create an antidote specifically for lion heads.
Oh, that's lucky.
And it works because Superman has a vast and extensive library of books about curing lion heads.
That's a fear I have.
That's Action Comics 243.
My face being turned into a lion.
Mm-hmm. Ashley, have you ever heard about the Super Merman of the Sea?
No. He dated a mermaid.
Well, this has nothing to do with that. Action Comics number 244 in September of 1958. While flying, this is Superman, the cover is him sitting on a crown, sitting on a throne, and he has a weird seashell crown across his head. And he's like the
ruler. Does he have a mermaid tail?
No, he's just like the ruler of the sea. So this story is, while flying across the Atlantic, Superman spots a rocket ship that slams into the ocean. Investigating, he finds two merpeople trapped inside.
Sure.
Superman tears the metal door off, allowing the man and the woman to swim free. The man introduces himself as Volcor, and his companion is his daughter, Layla.
Absolutely.
Or Lila. I think it's Lila. As the two alien mermaids cannot breathe normal air, Superman decides to exile himself to the undersea to help him acclimate permanently.
He just wants to enter into a polyamorous relationship with them.
He uses nameplates from sunken vessels to create a floaty message to explain his absence from the world. And a passing mariner finds the signs and alerts the world that Superman is now living under the sea.
That's stupider than the Lionhead.
Oh, we're not done yet. News of Superman's exile reaches the United Nations, and the assembly decide that it's necessary to bring Superman back by force.
Yeah, because this... Jesus Christ. Okay.
They order a sea dragnet, and a submarine armed with kryptonite-tipped torpedoes forces Superman to react. Eventually, he finds out that Volcor and his daughter are bad, so Superman then poisons the sea with oversalting, because the aliens can't stand that.
Can the fish or the mammals.
Yep. And it tricks the aliens into leaving, because if there's one thing Silver Age Superman is about, it's about tricking people constantly.
Great.
Because here's the thing. Silver Age Superman knew two things. He knew how to solve problems either by trust-shattering levels of lying and deceit, and by punching people and animals right in their stupid faces.
Great.
Yep. And this begins the aspect of Superman, another aspect of Superman from the Silver Age, that's Superman being a super dick.
Ooh, Batman's not even a super dick until the 90s.
And there's a whole website dedicated. I think it's called superdickery.com.
Oh, it is, yeah. Yep.
And it's about like all the crazy covers and stuff like that or whatever. Here's another version.
We'll share some on the Facebook page, I'm sure.
Superboy number 24 is a cover where Superboy is fat.
I've seen this.
And Lana Lang makes fun of him.
Yep, it's great.
In this issue, Superboy, who's only been away for 2 weeks, returns to Smallville only to discover something shocking. All the students at Smallville High have become super fat for no reason, including Clark's sweetheart, Lana Lang.
Rude.
And if you want to listen to our Lana Lang history lesson, it's last week.
Yeah, I have feelings about Lana.
Or it's 2 weeks ago. Sorry.
I don't know math.
Yep. The next day, Superboy swells up like a balloon, causing Lana to get suspicious because if Clark is fat and Superboy is fat, then Clark must be Superboy.
Yep, that's pretty much Lana's whole deal.
Now, Superboy eventually discovers that the entire town has been drinking milk tainted with growth formula, and thanks to some stupid cows who ate tainted crops.
Tell me how you feel about those cows, Jason.
Stupid cows. Now, Superboy eventually fixes his secret identity problem with tricking Lana into doubting that he and Clark are the same person.
They probably just put some protein powder in their milk.
And another issue from this time, a giant gorilla with kryptonite eyes is attacking Superman. And it looks like the laser beams are shooting Superman right in the butt.
Great.
This giant ape is Titano, the giant ape monster who shoots kryptonite lasers from his eyes.
Great.
Now, Titano is a... evil. He's not an evil, super intelligent ape like Grodd, like Gorilla Grodd.
That's a disappointment.
Nor is he an ape with an evil man's brain like the Ultra Humanite.
Also disappointing.
Nope. He's a normal ape who, in his debut, was dubbed one of the world's most intelligent apes when he was shot into space and driven mad by space radiation.
Great. Fantastic Four, actually.
Titano actually shows up several times in the Silver Age. And he becomes a classic Silver Age-y villain of Superman. Every time Superman decides that the best way to deal with this giant space-mad creature is to do what, Ashley? How do you think Superman, how do you defeat a mad ape?
Punch him in his stupid face.
You punch him right in his stupid face, and it works every time.
Hey, DC Comics, I know you're listening to this podcast. I would like to formally request that you bring Titano back into the current DC Comics Superman continuity. Thank you.
He's actually showed up a couple times post-crisis.
Great.
Yep. Let's go to Superman number 125.
Great.
On the cover of this issue, Superman is blasting rainbows from his fingertips.
Ooh!
This is the Rainbow Hand Superman cover. Here's a fun fact. Superman never has rainbow hands inside the comic. It only happens on the cover.
We just felt very gay that day.
That's it.
That's great. Love it.
Superman 125. Here is where Superman probably gets the coolest power that he's ever had.
Are you lying?
No, I'm actually serious. Okay. This is like the coolest power that I think Superman could ever have.
Okay.
In the story, Superman gains a brand new superpower, the ability to shoot a tiny Superman out of his hand.
That's dumb.
Yes, you heard me right. There is a tiny Superman. This tiny Superman.
Does he go back into Superman's hand?
Yeah, sometimes.
Where does he live? Like in his forearm?
I don't know. In the tiny Fortress of Solitude. In the minuscule Fortress of Solitude.
Inside Superman's forearm?
So Superman holds up his hand. A tiny Superman comes out of his palm. And this tiny Superman gets all of Superman's powers, leaving regular super-sized Superman to just sort of hang out while tiny Superman saves people.
Oh, so they can't both have superpowers at the same time?
So everyone starts praising tiny Superman for his heroism. So, of course...
What if Superman gets jealous?
Oh, Silver Age Superman gets super jealous.
Good.
And he does the most Silver Age-y Superman thing that he could ever Silver Age-y do. He plots the death of his tiny duplicate.
I was just really hoping that you said that like he was going to punch him and splat him or something.
Because, you know, he decides that, of course, Metropolis is only big enough for one Superman.
One regular-sized Superman.
Yep. So... Actually, normal Superman never gets the chance to murderize Tiny Superman because Tiny Superman actually sacrifices himself to save Metropolis. And once that happens, normal Superman gets all of his regular powers back.
There's a very funny take on this story that you could do with one of the Atom characters. I can't quite figure it out right now, but if someone would like to pay me, I'd love to write it.
Sure. But, you know, someone who has paid us, and that is Lisa. Ooh. That is, we're going to stop real quick and we're going to thank our sponsor, Lisa Mattresses. That's L-E-E-S. A.
Yes, very and important to get the spelling right.
They sent us an amazing mattress.
Mm-hmm.
I've slept on it.
Yep.
It's amazing.
Yep.
It's comfortable. It's cooling. And they want you to spring into a better sleep. And Lisa actually is offering the deepest discount they've ever offered to our listeners right now. They're giving you $125 off any mattress if you go to lisa.com/geekhistory. Now, not only should you go to this link because Lisa is an amazing sponsor, but Lisa also donates one mattress for every 10 sold, and they plant one tree for every order received.
Awesome.
So they've donated 23,000 mattresses so far. Lisa Mattress is loved by 300,000 happy sleepers and counting. They have a socially conscious mission to end bedlessness in America, which I think is great. And they want you sleeping for a deeper night's sleep. So go to lisa.com, that's LEESA/geekhistory to get $125 off. And I'm certain that lisa.com supports tiny Supermans all over the world because they don't want them to be bedlessness either.
No.
So there you go. Thank you so much to lisa.com for sponsoring this episode.
Heck yeah.
All right, let's go back to the Superman in the Silver Age.
Is he still tiny?
No, we're going to
All right,
on.
Tiny Superman died.
Let's go out into publication history here.
Okay.
Now, Mort Weisinger, remember him?
Yeah, I like this guy.
He had said during his tenure on Superman that he wanted to introduce a new concept to Superman every 6 months. His goal was to make sure that Superman was more than a fad.
Mm-hmm.
And that is why some people call this period, beginning in 1958, the Superman Renaissance.
Mm.
Now, actually, one writer gets more of the credit than any other writer during this Superman Renaissance time, and that is Otto Binder.
Binder.
And you have heard of Otto Binder, correct, Ashley?
Oh, yeah.
Now, Otto Binder, if you don't know who he is, he created Krypto the Superdog.
Yes, Krypto!
The Phantom Zone.
Ooh.
Lucy Lane. Who's that, Ashley?
That's Lana Lang. That's Lois Lane's little sister, who you may have seen on mm-hmm. Supergirl.
He created Beppo the Super Monkey.
Jason's favorite.
He introduced Jimmy Olsen's Signal Watch.
Nice.
And he introduced the most important character of all, Titano the Super Ape.
Aw, Otto. Buddy.
Yep.
Why you gotta do that ape Sith?
Also, the Silver Age would introduce the Fortress of Solitude, which debuted in 1958 and was also, of course, located in the Arctic. It was on the side of a steep cliff, and the fortress was accessible through only a large gold-colored door with a giant keyhole, which required an enormous key to open it.
Do you like the big key?
No, not really.
Okay. It's been revisited a couple times, so I was just interested if you maybe liked other versions of it.
No, I like actually the All-Star Superman version of it, where it's just a tiny normal key because it's made of like
Very heavy.
Because it's like of dark matter.
Yeah.
Only Superman can lift it.
Cool.
Because there have been several jokes in modern storylines where everybody's like, oh, Superman, if you put your key outside your door, of course we're going to go inside.
Mm-hmm.
So the arrow shaped key at this time was so large that only Superman or another Kryptonian such as Supergirl could lift it. And of course, it sat outside the fortress front door.
Mm-hmm.
So there you go. The fortress also soon came home to become the home, of the Bottle City of Kandor.
Kandor with a K.
When Brainiac showed up during his first clash with the super crook Brainiac, Superman retrieved Kandor, which was a Kryptonian city stolen and shrunk by Brainiac before the explosion of Krypton.
Mm-hmm.
Happy to meet more survivors, Superman stored the Bottle City in his fortress and promised to find a way to enlarge them. And he'd come to fulfill his promise, helping the Kandorian survivors settle on the planet of Rokin. I think that's how you say it. It's R-O-K-Y-N.
That's what I would say.
I've never heard it said out loud.
Cool.
A few months later, after finding Kandor, Superman witnessed a Kryptonian rocket crashing near Metropolis.
Mm-hmm.
Superman went to check out what was the deal with this rocket, and he found his cousin Kara.
Kara Zor-El.
Kara Zor-El. Overjoyed to find his long-lost relative but unable to take care of her in the time, Superman sent her to his teen cousin to Midvale Orphanage as he trained her.
That's so rude.
I know. She could just live in his apartment. It's fine. Kara eventually concluded her training and was adopted and claimed the name of Supergirl, becoming one of Superman's most trustworthy allies.
Also, we have a Kara episode if you'd like to go listen to it.
And then in Adventure Comics number 210, Crypto the Superdog showed up.
Oh, he's the goodest boy.
On Krypton, there was a parallel evolution that led to the emergence of an analogous species to Terran cats, simians, birds, and dogs. Mm-hmm. Basically, cats, monkeys, birds, and dogs on Krypton look exactly the same.
Yep.
They were also domestic companion animals on Krypton as they were on Earth. As explained in his first appearance, Krypto was originally the toddler Kal-El's dog when they were both on Krypton. And Jor-El, while testing some prototypes for the rocket that would send Kal-El to Earth, decided to use Krypton as a test subject. However, Krypto's rocket was knocked off course and the rocket drifted through space for years until it eventually landed on Earth.
Kryptonians aren't that good at aiming rockets.
No, or their rockets have terrible guidance systems.
Yeah, there you go.
Now, the early appearances of Krypto in the comics usually featured some exaggerated anthropomorphic facial expressions, but they were eventually all replaced to make it just look like a dog.
Sure, yeah. Fair.
When fighting crime, Krypto usually wore a gold collar and a miniature facsimile of the famed Superman S symbol for a dog tag, and also a dog-sized version of Superman's cape. Whenever he was on Earth and wanted to appear as an ordinary dog, Krypto would simply pull his collar and its attached cape off, pulling it back on when necessary. In one story, he was gifted with a collar that contained a retractable cape with the collar that could be unfurled or unhidden by pressing a stud on his collar. Now, while not accompanying Superboy or Superman, Krypto spent much of his time romping through space. However, when he was on Earth with the Kent family, he usually posed as their pet dog, Skip.
They called him Skip? I didn't know that.
And in that identity, his guardians would apply a brown dye patch on his back for a disguise when Krypto would later burn it off with his heat vision when he went into costume.
Jesus.
So he'd sort of just get a spot.
He would just be casual Snoopy?
Yep. Yeah, basically. So at this time, so many new Kryptonian survivor characters were added to the Superman lore.
Mm-hmm.
And apparently, young comic readers at the time loved all of them.
Well,
they could not get enough, and Superman's book sales actually grew.
Wow.
Now, Ashley, I'm going to ask you a question here.
Mm.
Do you think Superman should be the only survivor of Krypton? We've had this discussion in previous episodes. Or if not, do you have a favorite survivor of Krypton that's not Superman?
I have feelings about this. The only human survivor, or the only Kryptonian survivor that I'm okay with is Supergirl. And I could really, this is going to sound hateful. I don't mean to sound hateful. I like the character of Supergirl a lot. I've enjoyed many Kara stories, but if Supergirl went away from Superman lore and we never saw any more Kryptonians again, we just saw
Superman,
I'd be okay with it.
I would too.
But if we're going to have one, it should be Kara. Yep. I don't need any Kryptonian villains, but I got a soft spot for Krypto. He's really cute.
I'm surprised you like Crypto.
I do like Crypto.
Because he's kind of goofy.
He looks like my family dog growing up.
Oh, that's why you like him? Yeah. Did you give a cape to your dog growing up?
No, we were not allowed to dress up our animals.
Okay.
Also, she was a lady dog.
Well, actually, you should know that Superman couldn't be the only superhero to have their own super pet. So Supergirl got her super pet as well. It's time to talk about Streaky, the super cat. In Action Comics number 261 in February of 1960, Supergirl was experimenting on a piece of green kryptonite in an attempt to find a way to neutralize its deadly effects. When her experiment failed, she tossed the kryptonite, or X-kryptonite as it was known in the issue, out the window. Though her experiment failed, her current pet, Streaky, came across the X-kryptonite and was exposed to its radiation. And as the comics described it, due to the unique combination of chemicals and X-kryptonite, it has given Streaky superpowers. Now, this, to me, says that in comic book history, as a Smallville fan, you're going to know what I'm talking about. Streaky the Supercat is the very first meteor freak. Now, that's, of course, if you don't know what we're talking about, in Smallville, all of Clark's enemies in the first, like, 3 to 4 or 5 seasons were people that were exposed to the radiation of kryptonite, and they got superpowers.
That's really cute, and there's a really fun way that you could incorporate that into a comic book, and I would...
she's a meteor freak?
I would love DC to hire us for that.
All right, Ashley, I'm going to bring to you the challenge of the super pets.
Oh, boy.
Can you name the four? Actually, I'm going to tell you this. Can you name all the super pets?
No.
Of just Superman?
No. There's
name the ones you know.
Crypto.
Yes.
Streaky.
Yep, we got those two.
Beppo
the super monkey.
Whatever the horse's name is.
Comet.
Oh, yeah.
Comet the super horse.
The one that's maybe Kara's boyfriend and maybe not.
Yeah, it's maybe a mystical. We're not going to talk about that.
That's it, right?
There are others.
Oh, well, then I have no idea.
Those are the main four.
Yeah.
Are those four. The other ones are...
Hissy the Snake.
No. Fun fact, Titano, the super ape, eventually becomes a super pet in the future.
I just want to swear now. Yeah. That's dumb.
There's also Squawky, the super parrot. He was from Krypton and was dreamed up by Supergirl in an alternate history where her super pet was Squawky instead of Crypto.
No.
There's also Superfly, who was an ordinary fly that was accidentally given the powers and abilities of Superman by Lex Luthor.
These are terrible. No.
Here's one that you're going to love.
Okay. Is it a fox?
No. It's another cat. Wizzy the Super Cat.
What color is Wizzy?
I don't remember.
I'm going to Google it.
I don't know. Wizzy the Super Cat is the 30th century descendant of Streaky the Super Cat.
Wizzy can stay.
Except Wizzy has gained powers over the course of time and is also telepathic. So you could talk to your kitty.
Great. I want it.
Yeah. I don't remember. I think Wizzy's the same color. Wizzy's either white or gold. I can't remember exactly.
I will let you know shortly.
Yes. All right. So Ashley, so we've learned about all the super pets and Wizzy's really cool.
Wizzy is gold.
Yeah. Exactly like
and Shiki. Also wears a space suit.
Well, it's...
That is gold and red.
It's the future.
It's amazing.
Ashley, it's time to talk about how Superman...
got his groove back?
No. Like when Harry met Sally, it's time to talk about when Superman met Batman.
Oh, okay. Yep. I was like, what?
Now, 4 years in the comic books, they appeared in Team Comics rarely. Mm-hmm. They would be on the cover, but they wouldn't be on the inside. And they were both on the cover of several issues of World's Finest. But fun fact, the comic in the beginning actually had separate adventures for the heroes. They never teamed up in them.
Yeah. It was an anthology book originally. Mm-hmm.
Now, it is credited as the cancellation of All-Star Comics that led to the Superman editors finally teaming these two icons together. Now, this actually happened in 1951, so we're kind of backing up chronologically if you're sort of following it along in time. So the issue where this happens, during an issue of Superman, billionaire Bruce Wayne and reporter Clark Kent found themselves forced to room together on a crowded cruise ship. When a fire erupted on board, Bruce switched the lights off in an attempt to change into the Batman costume so he could save the day, and Clark took the opportunity to change into Superman at the exact same time. Fate played its hand, and a light suddenly shone through the cabin's window, exposing each other's secret identity to their bunkmates.
Man, the dude who wrote Seduction of the Innocents having a field day.
Yep. Though the heroes forge a friendship by the story's ends, they seem to be the end of it, and no further mention of Batman was found in Superman's line of books. And the same was true of Superman and Batman's books, and the pair went their separate ways and didn't speak again.
But can you imagine if you had been reading Batman and Superman comics all this time? There's really no continuity, and then this happens? Like, it would have been incredible.
Yep. By 1954, World's Finest Comics had moved from a quarterly title to a bi-monthly one, and the comic was a huge 68 pages. Now, the decision came down to shorten the number of pages in the title, and this would drop the cost of the book from 15 cents to a dime, with the hopes that a price reduction would help the title sell better. However, less pages meant that one of the two main features, Batman... or Superman, had to be lost. So, was it going to be Superman kicked out of World's Finest, or was it going to be Batman? Now, remembering that the two heroes had actually met years earlier, an editor rolled the dice and created a new main feature featuring both Superman and Batman working together issue after issue.
I love that the solution is, what, like, we could get rid of Batman or Superman, but why not Batman and Superman.
The plan actually worked, and World's Finest Comics became a must-read title for both Superman and Batman fans, and the title ran almost continuously until 1986.
I maintain that, kind of like you mentioned about Lois Lane earlier, that there should always be a World's Finest title.
I was just about to say that. Like Action Comics, I was going to say, like, I think DC should always have a title called The World's Finest in some form or aspect. So yeah. I'm glad you agree with that as
I
well.
I do.
So let's talk about several of Superman's Silver Age adventures with Batman.
Okay.
Then this is just going to be a bunch of, a bunch of different ones, you know.
Cool.
When Superman rescued Batman and Robin from a mob attack, he would accidentally reveal his secret identity to Lois Lane, prompting Batman and Robin to help stage an elaborate hoax in order to once more protect Superman's identity.
Okay.
Yep.
I love that we don't trust Lois at all. Yep.
In another adventure, when Clark Kent and Lois Lane were captured by criminals who used heavy artillery in their crimes, Batman and Robin were led to their hideout thanks to Superman's secret aid, and they captured the thugs. Now, I'm just going to say here, as a former military person, if criminals are using heavy artillery, what the hell are they doing?
Right, and how are Batman and Robin a better opposition for them than Superman?
Sometime later, Batman and Superman came up with an elaborate hoax, because this is the Silver Age, where Batman poses as a swami and needs Superman's assistance in order to capture a group of crooks. Now, Ashley, would you want to explain to our audience what a swami is?
A swami is usually a Middle Eastern or Indian mystical figure.
Usually wear a turban.
Yeah, and they usually stereotypically play kind of a flute, and they're like, they're presented as
and
snake
a snake comes out. Yeah, a snake floats in the air.
It is something that around the middle of the 20th century became a stereotypical representation of like a Hindu mystic.
Yes, correct. Correct. When Batman was exposed to a lethal gas by the purple mask mob that would have killed the Dark Knight, Superman and Robin made Batman believe that he had a broken leg to keep him out of action until the poison wore off.
Great.
Yeah. Batman and Superman also worked together to stop the evil Professor Pender, who used a machine to swap powers between them.
Oh, that's cool.
Using their respective abilities, Super Batman and Normal Superman managed to defeat Pender and return to their normal forms.
That's cool. That's actually a good idea. Yep. That would be a great cartoon today.
Sure. Next, Superman summons Batman and Robin to Metropolis to try and figure out who is trying to reveal Superman's secret identity.
Probably Lois.
This all turns out to be a ruse to keep the dynamic duo preoccupied while Superman travels to Gotham City to capture the Viral Mob.
Great.
Yes.
Those star characters.
But this, of course, would lead to the biggest Superman and Batman team-up ever.
Ever.
Ever. Their most important storyline, the composite Superman.
I was hoping you were going to bring that up.
Ashley, do you know what this is?
I really only know that he's half Superman, half Batman,
yes.
And I've seen the action figure.
Well, I'm going to give you the full rundown on the composite Superman.
Great. I've not read this issue.
Joseph Meech was a diver who had fallen on hard times.
Okay.
They're just, there's no more stuff to dive to.
Okay.
And I really miss diving.
Well, he can just hold on and go to Mercy Reef
and
later.
Being under the sea in an octopus's garden.
Do, 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 yep. Do, 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 garden.
In an attempt to draw publicity to himself, Meech set up a water tank on a sidewalk in Metropolis and dove off a building.
Okay.
Unbeknownst to Meech, the tank was leaking, and Meech would have died if not for the intervention of Superman catching him.
Mm.
Upon learning of Meech's misfortunes, Superman obtained a job for him at the Superman Museum, where Meech was employed as a janitor. Yes, Superman has a museum.
Cool. So does the Flash.
Mm-hmm. Meech's bitterness actually did not subside, and being surrounded by mementos of Superman's career directed his anger towards Superman. Because he wanted to blame anybody but himself.
Typical.
One night, as Meech was sweeping in front of a series of statues depicting the Legion of Superheroes, a bolt of lightning struck the display.
Okay.
The statues, who were actually miniature lifeless duplicates of the Legionnaires and not just actually statues because it's the Silver Age, they unleashed an energy blast that struck Meech, endowing him with the combined powers of the said Legion members. Determined to defeat Superman, Batman, and Robin for some reason, Meech now used his shape-shifting power to turn his skin green and form a costume that was half of Superman's costume.
Oh, he does have a green face.
And half of Batman's costume, calling himself the Composite Superman.
Great.
Meech left a message in both of the heroes' bases to meet him at a mountain. Now, why he didn't sneak attack either of these heroes as he could go inside his bases, I'll never know.
He's real Ra's al Ghul. He's like, meet me outside somewhere.
There at the mountain, he told the heroes that if he was not allowed to join their team, he would then expose their secret identities, which he had then learned via telepathy.
Great.
Yep. See, so he's badgering these people to join them.
Neither Batman nor Superman has superpowers, has telepathy, so I think it's weird that he has these.
He got the powers from the Legion members.
I know.
Because Legion members have shapeshifting abilities.
I know, but it's weird to me that...
I mean, the Composite Superman's a weird name.
Yeah.
Now, the Composite Superman then created situations for Superman and Batman to handle, which he intentionally sabotaged to humiliate the heroes.
Mm.
But of course, the heroes handled them.
Yeah.
Superman and Batman attempted to expose him by using robot duplicates, but failed due to Composite Superman's telepathy to read their minds, of course.
Mm.
And just before Meech was about to reveal the heroes' secret identities, the powers he gained from the statues faded away.
Oh, jeez.
And Meech tried to write down the secret of his powers in the Superman Museum, but his memory faded away before he could finish.
I didn't realize that the Composite Superman was that silly.
He's very silly. Like everything, the Silver Age should just be a synonym for silly.
Absolutely.
Now, the Silver Age is also the age of Superman that gives us the most varieties of kryptonite.
Oh, good.
So I hope you're ready to buckle in, Ashley, because there's a lot of them.
I'm so ready.
There is green kryptonite.
The normal one.
What does that do, Ashley?
It zaps Superman's powers. It's poisonous to Kryptonians.
Yep. And it could basically kill them with long-term exposure.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but it basically takes away their powers. There's also red kryptonite. You know what that is?
No, but I know it exists.
It debuted in Adventure Comics number 252 in 1958. And red kryptonite at this time weakens Superman to a greater degree than green kryptonite, but it also causes odd behavior and bizarre transformations. In modern storylines, red kryptonite basically makes Superman act angry.
Okay.
So that's kind of where it is.
Like a red lantern.
Yeah. There's anti-kryptonite. You know what that is?
It gives Superman better powers.
It debuted in Action Comics number 252. It's harmless to Kryptonians, but has the same effect as the green variety on normal humans.
Oh, so it's like plutonium.
Yep. Anti-kryptonite is also the power source for one version of the character of Ultraman, who is Superman's evil counterpart from the antimatter universe.
Yes.
There's also X-kryptonite.
I have no idea what that is.
We talked about that. It's the weird version of, there was an unsuccessful attempt to make an antidote to green kryptonite. It's harmless to Kryptonians.
Sorry.
And it made Streaky the super cat.
That's right. Okay, X kryptonite can stay.
Yep. What's blue kryptonite, Ashley?
Is that the one that depowers Bizarro?
Yes, it hurt. Blue kryptonite is good for Bizarro.
There you go.
Yep. It's an imperfect kryptonite, which is affects Bizarro
the
in the same way.
Imperfect Superman.
Mm-hmm. What is white kryptonite?
White kryptonite turns you into a hot Green Lantern character.
What?
Because, like, Kyle's the White Lantern for a while. Okay. I don't know what White Lantern is. Completely not
that joke. Debuted in Adventure Comics number 279, it kills all plant life from any world.
Awful.
What is gold kryptonite?
Gold kryptonite is what you get when you win the Kryptonian Olympics.
Good guess, but no. debuted in Adventure Comics
I've heard of this one.
299, it permanently removes a Kryptonian's ability to process yellow sunlight.
Oh,
yes.
Bummer.
A lot of people have supposed that in Superman 2, at the end of the movie, this is what Superman used to get rid of Zod's powers, even though you never see it on screen.
Well, that's a fun fan theory. So, I can get behind that.
What is silver kryptonite?
Silver kryptonite's what you get when you come in second at the Kryptonian Olympics.
Good guess, but no. it debuted in Superman's pal Jimmy Olsen number 70. It was revealed by Jimmy Olsen to be a hoax, but in post-crisis in Superman Batman number 46, it was modeled after the version that appeared in the Smallville TV series. Silver kryptonite causes Kryptonians to suffer from altered perceptions, loss of inhibitions, and extreme hunger cravings.
It sounds like it makes them a little stupid. Don't.
Yep. This kryptonite also causes Superman to hallucinate his greatest fear of it attacking General Zod during the final episode of season 2, Supergirl on the CW.
Mm.
What is Jewel kryptonite?
Jewel kryptonite is what you give your Kryptonian fiance when you want her to marry you.
Good guess, but not correct.
I've never heard of this before.
In Action Comics number 310, they are fragments of Krypton's jewel mountains.
Mountain. Oh, okay.
And they amplify the psychic powers of criminals imprisoned in the Phantom Zone, which is a very specific use.
Very specific.
But there you go. There's a bunch more, but most of them are hoax versions or whatever. I mainly wanted to stick to the main colors.
Cool.
Now, before we get out of the Silver Age, there are two stories that I want to touch upon.
Okay.
The first one is a guy that we've sort of already talked about, but to me, he is one of Superman's most important villains, and I think he doesn't get a fair shake, and I think he is one of Superman's...
Titano?
No. although this villain would have so much fun with Titano. This is the villain that would usually say, "Me am Bizarro."
I was hoping you were going to talk about Bizarro.
"Me am Bizarro. Me hate geek history lesson."
Please request a Bizarro lesson that Jason must teach all in Bizarro speak.
"Me hate that idea of Bizarro geek history lesson. Me hate Ashley."
Yeah. That's not
"Me
funny.
Hate Ashley big time."
Yeah.
"Me hate talkie like this."
Me too.
"Me, you hate me talking like this?"
Yeah.
"Oh, good. Me Bizarro do it more."
Great. "No,
me,
you Bizarro do it less."
"Me Bizarro do it less."
There you go. See,
"Me Bizarro am so on track with how Bizarro talks."
Yeah. It would be so much fun and so irritating.
Yes, it would be. There are two sort of Bizarro origins.
Okay.
Okay. A scientist on Earth is demonstrating his newly invented duplicating ray to Superboy. Remember him?
Oh, yeah. He's fat.
Yep. And an accident causes the... Don't body shame Superboy.
I'm not body shaming him. I'm stating a fact.
And an accident...
I have no opinion on it.
And an accident causes the ray to duplicate the Superboy. The copy, quickly labeled Bizarro, is a flawed imitation as it possesses chalky white skin and childlike erratic behavior. Which is, I don't see how that's any different than Superboy.
Shunned, really shady.
Yep. Shunned by the people of Smallville, Bizarro befriends a blind girl. But he loses all hope when he realizes that the girl did not shun him or flee him because she was blind.
Yeah, I actually think that's really, really sad.
Superboy is eventually forced to kill the less than perfect clone using the remains of the duplicating machine, which acts like blue kryptonite.
Aww.
Years afterwards, Superman's arch foe Lex Luthor recreates the duplicating ray and uses it on the grown hero, hoping to control the duplicate. This Bizarro that is created, however, is confused, stating, "Me not human, me not creature, me not even animal, me unhappy, me don't belong in world of living people. Me don't know difference between right and wrong, good and evil." There's a taste there of what the Bizarro geek history lesson would be like.
Yeah.
That was a direct quote from that appearance.
Wow.
Luthor is arrested by Bizarro for recreating him because Bizarro not good boy.
There you go.
But forgotten as Bizarro attempts to emulate Superman, creating havoc in the city of Metropolis and almost exposing Superman's secret identity as Clark Kent. When Bizarro falls in love with reporter Lois Lane, she used the duplicating ray on herself to create a Bizarro Lois.
I didn't know that.
Yep, which I think should be called B-Lois, who is instantly attracted to Bizarro.
Aww.
The Bizarros leave Earth together, determined to find a home where they can find themselves. And there are more Bizarro tales, including a Bizarro family and a Bizarro world, but those are the two that I want to talk about.
Cool.
Are you looking up a picture of Bizarro Lois?
Yeah, I am.
Okay. Ashley's on her phone right now. Ashley.
Oh, she's cute. She got cute hair. She got a dress.
She's very cute.
She's cute.
And she's also been brought back recently in Superman Rebirth.
I am pro Bizarro Lois.
Yep. And also Boyzarro has been brought back as well, which been created by Patrick Gleason and Peter Tomasi. But Ashley, of course I saved the best for last.
Oh, boy.
We are going to talk about what I consider to be the most important Superman storyline of all time.
Oh, boy.
And Ashley, you know me.
Yeah.
The listeners know me. Do you have any guesses what I consider to be the most important Superman Silver Age storyline of all time? The one that has the most far-reaching effects, has changed more lives, and has created the best covers.
That's... I really hope it's the one where they make Robin and Jimmy Olsen dig their own graves.
No, that's not correct.
But that's
a world's finest issue.
Yeah, it's not a...
This is in Superman.
I also can't tell if you're joking or not.
I am serious as a button.
As the Dickens?
As a Bizarro would be.
I don't know. I honestly don't know.
We're going to talk about the most important Superman storyline of all time.
Yeah.
Which is called Superman Red and Superman Blue!
Spit.
Now, the original Superman Red and Superman Blue tale is an imaginary story that first appeared in Superman 162 in July of 1963. It's actually written by Leo Dorfman.
What a great name.
Drawn by Kurt Swan, the legendary Superman artist.
Oh, he draws such a cute Superman.
Now, in this story, Superman is compelled to finish a list of unaccomplished goals, including the enlargement of the Bottle City of Kandor, which he hadn't done at this time, and eliminating crime and evil from Earth. And in order to accomplish these goals, Superman invents a machine powered by various types of kryptonite that will increase his intelligence. The machine works, increasing Superman's intelligence 100-fold, but with the unexpected side effect of splitting Superman into twin beings, one outfitted in an all-red Superman costume and the other in an all-blue version. The twins named themselves Superman Red and Superman Blue.
Very creative.
Now, the twin Supermen successfully enlarge Kandor, freeing its citizens from their bottle prison. They then bring the remnants of Krypton back together, creating a planet called New Kryptonite. They eliminate all existing Kryptonite as well, and the two Supermen go on to create an anti-evil ray, which can cure criminal tendencies in anyone. They place the ray into satellite orbit around Earth, curing not only villains such as Lex Luthor and Mr. Mixel Spitlick, but communists such as Nikolai Khrushchev and Fidel Castro.
What?
Yep. The reformed Luthor then goes on to invent a serum that cures all known diseases, which he puts in the water supplies of every country across the world.
What?
With nearly all the world's problems solved, the two Supermen have time to deal with personal matters. And the split allows them to resolve the long love triangle between Superman, Lois Lane, and Lana Lang.
That's right.
And Jimmy Olsen. No, not Jimmy Olsen.
And Jimmy Olsen. Yep. It's more of a square.
Each woman claims her own Superman, and they have a triple wedding. Because...
Oh boy, that's not troubling at all.
Superman Blue marries Lana... Superman Red marries Lois, and Lucy Lane finally marries Jimmy Olsen.
Okay.
Superman Red decides to live on New Krypton, sacrificing his powers because he's under a red sun.
Mm-hmm.
And Superman Blue remains on Earth, starting a Superman family.
Aww.
Now, again, as you can see with that happy ending, how is that not the most important Superman storyline of all time?
That will completely pay off in about 20 years, 30 years.
Now, before we leave the Silver Age, there's a couple things we have to talk about.
Okay.
Superman debuted on Broadway during the Silver Age in a musical called It's a Bird, It's a Plane, It's Superman.
There's exactly one good song in it.
Yep. It's a musical comedy, and it closed after 128 performances. Go Google you some YouTube clips. Hopefully, the Mind University will share some of these clips. It's really funny to watch. And soon, editor Mort Weisinger.
That guy.
Who is responsible, in my opinion, for the Superman Renaissance, would leave DC in 1970, and that would end the Silver Age of Superman.
Aw, BB.
And there you go. There is the Silver Age of Superman history of Geek History Lesson.
That was good.
Yeah? Was that good?
Yeah, you did all kinds of crazy stuff.
All right, let's go into recommended reading.
Where Professor Jason is going to recommend a whole bunch of cool stuff that you can read if you are particularly taken with the Silver Age of Superman. You can find this and all of our past recommended reading at geekhistorylesson.com/recommended reading.
That's right. You go over there, you click on these books, you buy these books, you support the Mind University.
Mm-hmm.
First one is Batman and Superman in World's Finest, the Silver Age Volume 1. This is a lot of the early World's Finest. It's a newer collection. It also collects Superman 76, which is their first meeting that
nice.
I told you about in the cruise ship.
Nice.
The other thing is a couple of trades. There's Superman in the 50s. It's out of print, but you can still buy some copies on Amazon, and there's a lot of the good Silver Age storylines. And there's also Superman in the 60s, which is another trade as well. It's also out of print, but you can find it. This has classic storylines like Superman's return to Krypton and a lot of good Super Baby Jimmy Olsen Lois Lane storylines.
Cool.
So let's go into the discussion.
Well, we're going to discuss stuff.
Ashley.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts on the Silver Age of Superman?
I have a lot of different and complicated thoughts about the Silver Age in general, because it's, I don't enjoy very much of it. However, I think with a character like Superman, and I think you putting it out at the top of this lesson and highlighting it throughout mm-hmm. your breakdown was very interesting and illuminating for me. I think for Superman, it's maybe one of his most definitive ages.
Yes.
Like, I think it's so fascinating that...
the silliest age created the Superman
like
that we know.
Mort Weisinger, that's the editor's name, right?
Mort Weisinger.
Is kind of like the Bill Finger, as mm-hmm. you know, as Bill Finger was the Batman.
Before Superman.
He is the facilitator of so many things that define who Superman is. And it's, you're right, it is wild that it came out of a lot of silliness,
mm-hmm.
you know? So yeah. I guess I think it's important is what it comes down
it
to.
It is important. It's an aspect of, because from this moment on, Superman is solidified.
This is the Superman that we know.
This
absolutely.
Is the Superman that we know.
Mm-hmm.
But this is also the change, and we're going to get into that. We're going to get a little bit of that in the Geek History Lesson Extra.
Ooh.
All right, let's go into the teaching tweet.
We're in 140 characters or less because we're old school. Professor Jason is going to summarize everything that he just taught us about Silverman in the Silver Age, and you can find this tweet at GHL Podcast.
Silver Age Superman. Did you know that Superman once refused Aquaman a glass of water when he was moments away from death? True story, hashtag superdick. Now let's go into the GHL honor roll.
Yes, the honor roll is a status that you get if you head on over to iTunes, leave us a 5-star review. If you write something, we'll read it.
But it's important that you leave a 5-star
review.
Now, we forgot to do this in the last couple episodes, so I have 4 new students that are going to add on to the honor roll.
Wow.
This is from Balloon ZMU.
Nice.
Who said, I'm a huge comic book and geek culture fan, but I've never found a podcast that gives a great explanation into the history of characters I've come to know and love. Definitely going to listen to past episodes to learn more. I highly recommend this podcast.
Thank you.
The next one comes from The Taffy Guy. This is a great podcast that gets to the questions we all have about our favorite characters. The question is, when will they get to one of the best detectives in DC that has all the answers? Soon. We'll get to the question. I don't know. A lot of people request the question.
Yeah, they do. Thank you.
So the next one comes from All Geeks Aside. These guys have good chemistry. Only reason not 5 stars is that the episodes are not long enough. Here's a fun fact, All Geeks Aside. You still gave us 5 stars.
Yeah, they're okay. Good. They're good.
Yep.
Thank you.
The next one comes from Calejo19. Hey, y'all. Callie here. I recently found this podcast after hearing you all on another podcast that I also listen to. Y'all got me so intrigued in what y'all were doing over here at GHL, so I found GHL and immediately subscribed on iTunes. Now that I found y'all, I've been going back and listening to y'all's previous episodes.
Yay, thank you so much.
All the y'alls were actually in there. So
I believe you.
So Kalejo 19, All Geeks Aside, The Taffy Guy, and Balloon ZMU. And All Geeks Aside, even though you desperately tried not to be part of the honor roll, you're part of the honor roll.
Yeah, whether you like it or not.
Whether you like it or not, you're here. So thank you all. If you want to join them and roll into the teacher's lounge where you can eat our bagels, you have to leave us 5 stars on iTunes. And it doesn't matter what you write. You can even assault us in there, and we'll read on the air.
Yeah, there you go.
So there you go.
Please don't assault us. We love you.
Yeah, yeah. If you want more Geek History Lesson podcasts, go over to patreon.com/Jawin, that's J-A-W-I-I-N, and listen to our extra podcast, Geek History Lesson Extra, where this week we were going to talk about, did the Silver Age ruin Superman?
Ooh,
I think that's going to be a very, very juicy episode there. So support the podcast, do that, and become a super friend, and you can enjoy all the extra content we produce over at patreon.com/Jawin. Ashley, where can they suggest future lessons of Geek History Lesson Podcast?
Well, if you would like to suggest future more diving into Superman, some Silver Age Wonder Woman or Batman or anything else, really, you can do that at geekhistorylesson.com, facebook.com/geekhistorylesson, or again on Twitter at GHL Podcast.
You can follow me on Twitter at Jawin, that's J-A-W-I-I-N. You can follow Ashley on Twitter at Ashley V. Robinson. And you can follow the podcast on Twitter at GHL Podcast. Don't forget to subscribe to this podcast everywhere you can hear a podcast. Now we're to the last section, hashtag stick around. Go use that on Twitter to let us know that you stick around for these episodes. Ashley, I saved one Superman Silver Age story for the very end. This is the story of Superman and Lois Lane's baby wedding.
Oh no, this is a bad one.
Do you know about this one?
Yes.
Okay, so hashtag stick around, guys. I'm saving this just for you listeners who stick around to the very end of the podcast and support us, you know, pimping all our stuff that we pimp.
Yeah.
So there you go. This is in 1963 in Superman's girlfriend Lois Lane number 42. A horrible accident changes Lois's personality so much that she blackmails Superman into marrying her. Superman, who is like never going to be hoodwinked into marrying Lois Lane, of course, he disguises
during the Silver Age.
He disguises an alien age reversal potion as perfume and allows his crazed bride to spritz herself. Now, this plan works, but the fun fact is that Lois accidentally sprays the substance on the Man of Steel, too.
Mm-hmm.
So the potion de-ages the duo even further, to the point that baby Lois and baby Superman have diapers on, and they're actually wheeled into a chapel for an insane infant wedding. But because Lois can't say anything but goo-goo when asked, do you take this man, the wedding is called off and the de-aging potion wears off. That's the Silver Age, folks.
Yeah, it's worth Googling just for the pictures.
The pictures are hilarious of seeing the panel of Lois going, goo-goo,
do you
take this man, goo-goo.
Awful.
Yep, it is awful. And that is it for this Geek History Lesson on Superman, the Silver Age. When was Superman, the Bronze Age come? I don't know. Request it online.
There you
I'm
go.
Jason, Superman Red, Superman Blue, Inman.
I'm Ashley Victoria Robinson, and Professor Jason, will you please dismiss the class?
Geek History Lesson is never dismissed.